From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the ninth day of July, 2019. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. We'll explore how a farmland gift to a university like Illinois can fund scholarships and some entrepreneurial startups. We'll also discuss what's been happening in the agricultural energy. Stephen Platt will be here, and we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they settled in Chicago. July corn 6¾ lower today at 431¾. December at 437¼, down 6½. And next year's July at 450¾, down 5½ cents. July soybeans up 7½ at 882¾. November at 904¼, 6½ higher. And January futures at 9.16¼, finished 6¾ of a cent higher. The bean oil up 2 cents, bean meal up 3.70. July wheat down 7 cents at 5.09¾. Live cattle futures in Chicago up $1.97½. Feeders up 3.97½, and lean hogs up $1.30. Wayne Nelson is now here. He's with L&M Commodities. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. How's everything up northwest here?
Well, as you know, and maybe some of the producers have figured out, I am in Fargo visiting my daughter, and I'll be at the Grower Day event that Anheuser-Busch sponsors on Thursday. And they should have a whole bunch of farmers from across North Dakota, Minnesota, some of South Dakota as well. And we'll do a commodity week from there. Frayne Olson is going to join us from NDSU. He's Todd Hubb's counterpart, but does that kind of work for North Dakota State University and the Bison, along with Tommy Grisafi. He has an office out here in Mayville, North Dakota, and then a new person joining us for this event, Randy Martinson of Martinson Ag in Fargo. So I'm kind of looking forward to that day, and it was a great drive on the way out. I saw, Wayne, just a really variable crop, and I have been sorely disappointed that that didn't have an impact on the marketplace. Corn down again today. Why was that the case?
Well, I think a couple things. The funds are shedding some length. When we got the commitment of traders report, the funds were a little longer in corn than what they thought they were. Wheat is tugging on things. Of course, we haven't done very good at anything at getting any wheat tenders of late. We've been outpriced, you know, quite a bit on that. And, you know, there's a little bit of change in the weather forecast. The storm down in the Gulf looks to get bigger and come on up through there next week and maybe give us some moisture along with that. And then, of course, there's that doggone report on Thursday, and they're probably going to use the NAS numbers for the acreage planted, and that's going to sort of, I think, after what you said from your trip and what we've said or heard from all of our people around that we talked to, that those numbers might be a little high as far as the corn acreage planted.
Yeah, so they will use most likely those numbers, and that's what, 91.7 million acres for corn. What's the trade thinking that number actually will be, not on the USDA report, not the actual number?
Yeah, I think that they think it should be more at least what WASDE had last time, not the increase of the couple million acres there, and maybe even a little less. I think, you know, if they be 3 million less than the NAS numbers last, would probably satisfy a lot of people.
So if they were down at 88.5, 88.7, 88.2, something like that, they'd be more satisfied than not. Will they be surprised if it runs in at 91.7?
I don't think people would be surprised. They just won't believe it. But, you know, before when it was people in the pit, that was one thing. But now we've got algorithms and funds run with that. And those are going to be big numbers. And that's why a lot of people were liquidating some today, Todd. I think that they were just scared of how the funds, or not or the algorithmic run funds, might react to the news of that sort of size numbers.
Yeah, so that the black box trading could just dump the marketplace if that comes out again. However, the market will seek its own. Would that be an opportunity for producers to get some of the new crop covered if they haven't yet?
Well, I mean, I think you're talking about end users if they get a sell-off, or are you talking about farmers to sell some if we get a, you know, if they take the big numbers and push it down, why then that's not going to be so hot. You know, another thing they looked at today, though, Todd, is that it's looking like a head and shoulders formation on the charts here today, and if we don't sort of pull one out of here pretty fast, why? That's going to be the technical consideration is going to be hard on the market for a while.
Soybeans were in better shape today than they have been. What's there?
Well, I think that we're seeing a little bit unwinding of the long corn, short bean spread, and that basically, you know, as we're looking here, the November beans are sitting at 903, and we were getting up to where the corn bean ratio was a little bit tighter than what a lot of them had thought. But I do think that there's maybe a little bit of hope that some bean purchases might come in. And we're not near as far behind Brazil now either, that their prices are a lot closer than we were last year at this time. That right now, let's see, there's 33 cents difference rather than like the $2.30 there was last year between us and Brazil. So we're not lagging so far behind as we were last year.
Hey, thanks so much. Anything else before I let you go?
Like that. You know, watch the weather. I think that system down in the Gulf is going to be what really influences our market next week.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. Well, if you follow my Twitter account at Commodity Week, or you visit our website fairly often, willag.org, you'll know that a couple of weeks ago I made a trip to Nokomis, Illinois, and was reporting on the condition of the crops as I was traveling towards that small village in the state of Illinois. I was really headed down there for the rededication of a land gift that was made to the University of Illinois College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. The Sims Farm, since 2003, has been helping to fund scholarships. One of the people that was on hand for this rededication was Lucas Free. Now, he is one of the scholarship winners and, since graduating from the University of Illinois, has gone on to establish Amber Agriculture. That's a startup company with a really unique product for agriculture. I asked him to tell me a bit about that and about his experience at Illinois.
So Amber Agriculture, we're an early stage technology company based in Chicago where we're trying to help farmers use analytics and automation for grain management.
Oh, I know what that is. Are you the sensors inside the bins?
Yep, yeah.
Oh, nice.
So we our core technology is this kernel-like sensor about the size of your thumb that does temperature, humidity, moisture, but also historical location. So it's kind of this first sensor that can flow wherever grain does. We help farmers first with grain management for grain bins. But since it can flow with the grain, we can do cool analytics and tracking across the grain supply chain.
What are you doing here today?
So today we were celebrating almost like a rededication of the Sims Farm, which is a U of I farm that supports student scholarships in the College of ACES. So I graduated in 2015 from the College of ACES and was a recipient of that scholarship from the Sims Family Farm.
Oh, nice. So it helped you get through the University of Illinois in a nice way.
Definitely, yeah. What I kind of described out at the sign dedication was I was really fortunate after graduation to be in a position where I wasn't straddled with student debt and kind of had the ability to build a new enterprise right out of the gate because of that factor. So scholarships are really important for, you know, young people to be in that type of position to take risk, work on new big ideas, and build businesses.
What does Illinois mean to you as an entrepreneurial startup? And by that I mean the connections that you came up with through the agricultural college.
Yeah, I mean, certainly formative experiences through and through. I shared our kind of company building story. I'd obviously met my co-founder at the University of Illinois. We started it out of the University of Illinois. And as we've built our company, I've had several moments where there was kind of like an eerie foreshadow looking back to my College of ACES experience. I was an ag economics student, took advantage of a lot of the experiential learning opportunities, different ag econ tours, international, out to DC, out to California. So if I share a couple of those stories, we kind of started our enterprise. We have hardware, spent a lot of time or I guess if I backed up into that, was involved in the International Business Immersion Program. IBEP did a tour of the ag economy of Brazil as a part of that experience. And then 2-3 years down the road with our venture starting that, we spent 6 months in China. We have partners in Europe, have been to South Africa. They've got to kind of engage in that international aspect of agriculture through our venture very early. But my first taste of that was in the College of Ag, and we went to Brazil to study the ag economy. Similar next experience was the AgEcon does a policy tour of California, comparing the California ag economy to Illinois. Fast forward 3 years down the line with our venture, we were based in Silicon Valley about 6 months, kind of doing fundraising, learning the lay of the land of the investor ecosystem. But my first taste of San Francisco and the Valley was with the College of Aces and doing the ag economy tour, the policy tour of that. The last one I shared was ag policy tour. We went to Washington, D.C., College of Aces connections around the federal government, around policymaking, talking agriculture, was engaged with that tour. And then 3 years later, our little technology was held up in a hearing of the U.S. Senate Ag Committee as a potential solution to stop a key issue in fraud in the grain trade. So I've had kind of these 2 or 3 moments where what we were doing with our venture was a really fun moment. And looking back, I was kind of in that scene as a student through an AgEcon experiential learning tour. So the College of Aces was definitely kind of laid the groundwork to taste those experiences early, and was, you know, really just blessed with that kind of educational experience as an undergraduate.
Lucas Fry is an alumnus of the University of Illinois College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences and one of the co-founders of Amber Agriculture. Let's turn our attention now to the agricultural weather forecast. Don Day is with us from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Don, let's start with the weather forecast here in the Midwest. It looks like maybe some warmer, maybe even hot weather is on the way.
Certainly looking that way. For the first time in the summer season, we're going to start to see the development of a pretty good high over the eastern half of the United States. And this is something that's going to get started as we get to the weekend and as we get into next week. And that is going to lead to some much warmer temperatures. We don't see anything off the charts hot, but we see some consistent summertime heat, which is going to really help with heat unit accumulation and give us some heat unit accumulation that we've been lacking, certainly for the start of the growing season.
And how warm will those temperatures be?
Well, lots of areas are going to be in the 80s, 90s. We're going to see a lot of humidity with that as well. So it's going to be muggy. We expect at least the hottest temperatures relative to normal to start out into the northern and western plains and then move eastward into the Corn Belt by the early to middle parts of next week.
So heat has not been our problem or the bane for this year, at least so far. Rain, however, has been, and I'm wondering whether there is an event in the Gulf of Mexico that might become problematic.
It is something we're certainly going to watch. Over the course of the next couple of days, we're going to have at least a tropical storm. It'll be named Barry, and it is forecasted to be developing west of Florida, then heading westbound along the northern end of the Gulf Coast, turning northward probably into Louisiana by the weekend. And then what will happen is that this system will either take two tracks. It'll either continue to head west into Texas, bringing those areas a lot of rain. But if it gets curved north, it could end up bringing rain into portions of the southern and eastern Corn Belt right around the Tuesday-Wednesday time frame of next week. And, of course, with any tropical system, you could end up with some heavy rains. It is a bit of a wild card, without a doubt, taking a look at next week's weather in the Midwest and Corn Belt. Now, if we were to remove this tropical system, we would have that heat, and we would have occasional rain and thunderstorm activity, but nothing heavy. So it's something that growers are going to want to watch carefully in the coming days.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Now let's turn our attention to the agricultural energies. We're joined by Stephen Platt. He's at Archer Financial Services in Chicago. Thanks for being with us, Steve. Tell me about what I think has been kind of a ho-hum of a marketplace for the energies.
Well, you have to say a lot's happened here over the past month since I was last on. Although the market has rallied from the 52 level to around 57 or so now, it's surprising the market hasn't done more on the upside than it has. One would have thought with the tension high between the U.S. and Iran, tankers being seized, OPEC maintaining their output cuts and shifting them into the March time period from the end of this year, one would have thought that you would have had a much stronger market, and that has not happened. Certainly, vacations probably have played a role in just the uncertainty of events from one day to the other has probably limited participation. One has to, dig deeper to see what the root cause is in terms of this market not doing better. And I think I have to go back to what we talked about the last time in terms of market share. One has to basically think that the trade row in China and also the economic prospects has had an impact, but it is not just that. Certainly the U.S. situation, which is going to point to larger supplies once again next year in terms of the U.S., other producers such as Brazil and even Canada also increasing their output levels and not being a party to the OPEC agreement, that those will be key considerations as we move down into the years ahead, and that the longer-term prospects for this market probably have to be somewhat bearish in terms of prospects, given how the U.S. Demand equation is flattening out. Certainly other countries, even in the emerging markets, are starting to reflect prices at more market-driven levels as subsidies to their consumers are withdrawn because of a strong dollar and budget considerations. Another factor is certainly Saudi Arabia, who has cut their production sharply from anticipated levels that could have been had approached as much as 10.6 million barrels. They've had to cut their production down to as low as 9.8 to 9.9 here recently, which has really supported the OPEC agreement. And one has to think what is going to happen as their market share erodes in terms of the world economy. And if demand does, in fact, level out as we move into 2020, possibly due to any economic contraction, that they certainly will need to raise funds to support their debts and their budget deficit in order to continue to support their political regime in that country. So overall, I think there's certain factors that are underlying this kind of lack of strength and potential weakness that we've seen from one period to the next that has to be respected and probably will lead to potential downdrafts in this market as we move along and as maybe tensions ease. Iran and Venezuela are still a key factor contributing to the cutbacks in production. They certainly could, that those events could certainly turn out to be, you know, maybe that we'll start to see a softening in some of that tension, which could actually open up those markets once again, which would put even more pressure on the agreement as we move through the year. So those are key considerations that one has to identify, I think, as we move along in terms of the market direction. One thing to note is certainly nat gas prices have come down. Some of that certainly production oriented. And for those who use nat gas for drying purposes, maybe once the harvest progresses, probably should start to think about maybe even locking in some of those prices now before we approach that period, given the low prices that have been apparent here recently.
Can I ask you a quick question and try to summarize, I think, what you've just told me? So the idea here is that there is a large supply of energy available on the planet, and in large part because the United States has developed so many stocks in the last decade. And in the same process, the demand for that energy is shifting away from fossil fuels to some extent. Is there fear that this could destabilize the marketplace in general? And I mean that the market is based on energy supplies rather than and fossil fuel supplies rather than other sources of energy.
Todd, you're right on track, I think, in terms of that assessment. One thing to recognize is the U.S. is not the only potential shale production area. They have advanced that to the point where certain other areas could also be tapped over time. That has happened quickly in terms of the U.S. and certainly could open up some of those other areas as well. The other thing is certainly use of energy resources and hydrocarbons has certainly been knocked by the move to be more aware of climate change and the like, which has certainly shifted even us to electric cars. Those types of things are all at work in terms of the longer term trend for this market and has to be respected. It could have some pretty major economic impact as we move down the road.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it a lot.
My pleasure, and have a great day.
You too. That's Stephen Platt. He is with Archer Financial Services in Chicago. Joined us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.